Welcome. Good evening. We've been wading through the stories in this old collection of Zen koans called the Book of Serenity. And today we come to case 9. Last week, as I recall, was the story of Baijiang's fox, a story about not obscuring cause and effect, not being blind to the causes and conditions that bring forth the appearance of this moment and this moment and moment to moment. So this is a little bit like a sequel, maybe. Maybe all of these koans are just sequels to each other. Different angles on the same basic points. We have some of these Zen stories about dogs and foxes, and this story is about a cat. From ancient times, cats seem to hang around Zen temples. You can see them right outside the door. Maybe they're past Zen ancestors come back as cats, because it seems like kind of nice, the life of a cat. They're so friendly and fluffy. This story is called Nan Chuan Kills a Cat. A classic Zen story that shows up in all the major collections of stories. A challenging story, because we have a Zen ancestor appearing to kill a cat. It's a disturbing story. If you're if you feel queasy around this kind of thing, you can go now. Here's the story. Well, here's the introduction to the story. Kick over the ocean and dust flies on the earth. Scatter the clouds with shouts and empty space shatters. We could hear as these two sides of the ultimate truth beyond all ideas and concepts, and the workings of cause and effect in this world. So kick over the ocean of ultimate truth, the vast inconceivable ocean, and dust flies all around on the earth. Kick over this vast inconceivable ocean, it actually stirs up all this dust on the earth. Scatter the clouds with shouts. In other words, scatter all your cloudy obscurations with shouts, and empty space itself shatters. So break through into the ultimate realm of non-conceptuality, there's effects in this world. And if you carry out effects, shouting at clouds, and so on, then there is a response in the inconceivable empty space. these two sides, the two truths working together in a way that we can't quite get a hold of. Strictly executing the true imperative is still half the issue. As for the complete manifestation of the great function, how do you carry it out? So, same point. Strictly executing the true imperative, the ultimate truth, is only half the matter. For the complete manifestation of the great function, how does one carry it out? So the story now could be seen as having these two sides. The case, number 9, goes like this. One day at Nan Chuan's temple, the eastern and western halls were arguing over a cat. The story doesn't explain what they were arguing about. But there was this one side over on the west and one side over on the east. And there was one of those temple cats hanging around, and maybe they were arguing about which residence the cat gets to live in. Either the eastern people wanted it with them, or the western people wanted it with them, or the eastern hall people actually didn't want it. Because it was a kind of like, the cat required a lot of attention, and when they'd sit zazen, it would curl up on their lap, kind of disturbing. Can you guys take it for a while? Maybe they did want it or didn't want it. Or maybe they were just arguing about whether cat has Buddha nature or not. What is a cat anyway? Some argument, some dispute about this cat. Sweet fluffy cat, causing no trouble. But these pesky monks find an argument about almost anything. You think they'd have better things to do in the Zen monastery than argue over cats, but that's what they were doing on this particular occasion. And when Nan Chuan, the teacher, saw this, he took up the cat, held it up, and said, "If you can speak, if you can express something, I won't kill it." The group had no reply. Nan Chuan cut the cat in two. Ouch. If you can say something, if you can speak, I won't cut it. In this case, the word say something, speak, express something is this term, do toku. That means literally something like the ability to speak. Maybe most accurately we could say, if you're able to say something, if you're able to express something, the cat won't be cut into pieces. So in Zen, this word became like an important term, dotoku, meaning like it's very important to be able to not just understand Dharma, but to express something. Dogen Zenji has a whole essay called Expression, or this ability to speak, in which he says, this is the function of Buddhas and ancestors. And when Buddhas and ancestors are looking to find Buddhas and ancestors, they look for this expression. Just say something. And you think that, you know, that living in this Zen community, they would be ready for this kind of thing, especially with Nanchuan. Nanchuan was one of those golden age Zen teachers who said things like, one time he said, the Buddhas of the three times, all the Buddhas of past, present, and future, don't know it. But house cats and cows know it. Therefore, Nanchuan loved cats. They know reality more clearly than the Buddhas of the three times. We celebrate this in the song of the Jewel Mirror Samadhi that we sometimes chant. The resting in the mirror-like awareness is a little bit like the mind of a house cat or cow. Very, very simple. Straightforward. Cats are pretty good at responding, too. You know, if you go towards them, they usually notice and they either back away if they're skittish, or they come forward if they like a warm lap. But people are sometimes not so straightforward. So the monks were arguing, Eastern and Western halls, the opposite ends, were arguing about different points of view about this cat. Nanchuan took up the topic of their argument, took up the focus of their distraction and delusion, thinking that they can win the argument, thinking that they can reach a conclusion that's correct and makes the other incorrect. Maybe had this argument maybe had been going on for a long time. Nanchuan picked it up, this cat, this house cat, that knows it more clearly than the Buddhas of the three times, picked it up, held it, and said, if you could just express something here, you're already talking a lot, right? You're arguing, but can you say something straightforward, to the point, beyond your discriminating ideas, that will release this Buddha-like cat? If you can express something, I won't cut it. And, you know, in Chinese, the pronouns are not usually emphasized, so it may not even be that I is there. I don't think it probably is. It's maybe more like, if you can say something, there'll be no killing here. It won't be killed. You're killing the cat already, right now, by your argument. But if you can speak immediately right now, from your deepest heart, the life, the true life of this cat will be saved. But the group couldn't speak. Isn't it amazing? Maybe hundreds of them, right? Not one of them could say anything. Couldn't even say, no, don't do it. What are you talking about? What are you talking about? They couldn't say anything. And sometimes silence is the ultimate response in Zen stories, but often it's not. This is a case where Nanchuan, this won't do. At least he did get them to stop arguing. I mean, that was pretty good, right? They stopped arguing. They were dumbfounded, shocked. What? Our teacher's going to kill the cat? But the stakes are high now because he's the Zen teacher. He's asking us for an expression. to speak some truth here. What if we say it wrong? What if we give the wrong answer? Then if I'm the only one who speaks and I give the wrong answer and he kills it, then it's almost like it's my fault. So if we all just silently do nothing together, at least no individual can be blamed. You know, I would propose that there's a cat being held up before us every moment. A perfectly healthy, non-discriminating, furry cat. Warm and full of life. This world is like that. This world holds up these cats every moment and asks for our response. There's no escape from this. Even just being silent, the cat is often killed, as we know. Or arguing further. Just hold it there for a second, and I will give you a little treatise on the 20 reasons why you should not kill the cat. It's going to be too late. We don't have that kind of time in this world. The cats are being held up and actually killed every moment. So this practice is asking us to respond. I could even say there's these two sides of Zen practice, of sitting silently upright in the Zendo or at home, basically not responding, you know, coming into this refuge place and letting go of all our ideas about everything and just being completely present, letting go of discriminating mind. And of course it comes up again, and drop it off again, and settle into the ease in the middle of this world of painful situations, of cats being killed all over, to hold the whole world of cat killing with this heart of peace. This is half of our practice. And then the other half is to get up from the cushion and respond. In myriad ways that we can't figure out beforehand. Who could have expected of these monks that the teacher would suddenly pick up the cat and hold a knife to it? We can't plan on how we're going to respond. This is how the two sides work together. By this sitting at peace, we can cultivate this presence and relaxation to take into very difficult situations. And from this presence, from this relaxed presence, then we can immediately and spontaneously respond to help the world. Sometimes it does take more, you know, careful thought and reflection, many situations do, but the classic Zen teachings often emphasize this kind of like immediate response. Just do something, say something. And often in these stories, people couldn't say anything. Maybe they feel like, well, we don't want to reason about this. It has to be so immediate that my mind has gone blank. If suddenly a cat was held up in the room now, and someone were to say, "Speak and it won't be cut." What could you say? What are you doing? What are you doing? And the true teacher would say, "Ah, yes, what?" And carefully put the cat in its cat bed and let it rest. Any other responses? It's about to. It will suffer greatly if we don't immediately respond. You could ask that. Yeah? You're asking, does it want to be killed? And then the person holding it could say, "Do you want to be killed?" And it's, "Yellow." Oh, okay. So that's a good.
Does a bodhisattva kill?
Does a bodhisattva kill? Bodhisattva cannot kill. So this would be one question to ask is, did Nanchuan actually kill the cat? Or was Nanchuan just the kind of like channel for all these arguing monks? Yes?
The cat is already dead. How can you kill it?
Thank you. The cat's already dead. How can you kill it? So, you're a lively bunch. I feel so relieved that this Zen assembly is a little more lively than Nanchuan's. As the commentary says, well, the commentary says, at that point, if there'd been someone who came forward and either extended open hands or grabbed Nanchuan by the chest, held him tight and said, "After all, we sympathize with the master's spiritual work." "After all, we sympathize with the master's spiritual work." Even if Nanchuan had specially carried out the true imperative, I dare say, as the commentator, that person would have been able to save the cat. But this den of dead rats had no energy at all. Once Nanchuan held forth, he wouldn't withdraw, and he acted out the order to the full. So this is no den of dead rats. So the story goes on. Excuse me, I didn't finish it. Later in the day, Nanchuan's great disciple Zhao Zhou, who sometimes liked to talk about dogs, he came back to the temple, and Nanchuan brought up the foregoing incident to Zhao Zhou and asked him. Zhao Zhou immediately took off his sandals, put them on his head, and left. Nanchuan said, "If you had been here, you could have saved that cat." Strange Zen people. Put the sandals on his head and left. Various interpretations people have about this sandal thing. Some rumors going around through the ages about, well, putting sandals on your head is an ancient sign of mourning the loss of a loved one in old China. Has anybody ever, actually, do you know about Chinese culture? Is there anything like this?
So have you ever tried to put your sandals on your head and walk around?
Maybe difficult, huh?
Well, I would say.
You may have to tie them on or something, yeah. But maybe in old China they had different kind of sandals that were like form-fitting to heads. I don't know. But then some criticize that and say that's just a kind of like, it makes it a nice, neat, conceptual version. The main point seems to be that when told the story, he immediately took off his sandals, put them on his head, and walked out. He brought forth an expression, and his teacher seems to have approved it.
Seems like an expression of things are upside down. Out of kilter.
Things are upside down.
Sandals belong on feet.
And we have a great story, usually not related to this case, from the great Indian teacher Shantideva, the author of The Bodhisattva's Way of Life. Maybe one of the most famous verses in Shantideva, a great image that you can take with you. In chapter 5 on vigilant introspection, the first verse that kind of leads up to the classic verse says, harmful beings are everywhere like space itself. Harmful beings, you know, are filling this world. Impossible it is that they should be suppressed. But let this angry mind alone be overthrown, and it's as though all foes had been subdued. So, in old Indian poetic language, verse form, harmful beings everywhere. How can we ever stop harmful beings, right? But if we stop this one, then that actually will help the world. It's not to say we don't ever protest harmful beings, but from the practice perspective, first and foremost, we take care of this one. And then we be peace, right? And we offer that example. So then the classic metaphor verse that follows this verse is to cover all the earth. I'm going to change this a little bit. In the verse he says leather shoes, but because this is kind of like a little bit like an animal rights koan, let's change it to straw sandals. So to cover all the earth with sheets of straw, where could such amounts of straw be found? But with the straw soles of just my sandals, it's as though I cover all the earth. And then the follow verse says, and thus the outer course of things I myself cannot restrain, but let me just restrain my mind, and what is left to be restrained? So you see this wonderful image of how can we, you know, the soles of our shoes are what protect us from the thorny world, from the rocky world. And so let's cover the whole world, pave it with shoe sole, pave it with soft straw. And then we can walk barefoot on it, right? But this is very difficult to cover the whole world. But we can cover just this tiny little area of our own feet, and then just take our feet wherever we go, and this protects us from the world, the thorny world of harmful beings. Isn't it a great image? Very efficient too, right? We don't need much straw to cover our feet. Yes?
It just brings to mind, for me, another way of saying what you're saying is, even if compassion doesn't flow from the universe, hypothetically, even if violence flows from the universe, there's still no reason to be not to be compassionate and loving.
Most assuredly so. Yes, all kinds of things manifest from the inconceivable source, from this interdependently arising universe. things that appear as great harm and appear as great compassion. But whatever happens, our response, the bodhisattva's response, is always just meet it with compassion. Just wear these shoes that, in a way, protect the world from us, as well as protect us from the world. A shoe sole is like that, yeah. In Japan, when we go at the temple there, we go out on alms collecting. We wear these straw sandals in the traditional way. You can kind of feel the lumps of earth. It's kind of like there's some modern shoes these days that are like you maybe seen these soleless running shoes. They're like soft bottomed shoes that enable you to feel the earth, but you still feel the lumps and ridges in it. It's kind of nice. It's a little protection from the really sharp spots, but you can still feel it. Straw sandals are like that. A little bit hard. They don't have any arches. But then also one time I joined the monks for alms collecting in Thailand, and the ancient tradition there from the Buddha's time is barefoot alms collecting. I think just because it's more humble than even wearing sandals. So, and I found that they were used to it there. But on these gravel, especially gravel roads, it was countryside, it wasn't paved roads, a lot of gravel, I would fall way behind in the line, very hard to walk, without any like padding. We need some padding to protect this world from our own anger, and to protect us from the world's anger. So, that is, like Jane said, this is the appropriate place for sandals, is on one's feet to meet the world like that. And it's very grounding to walk along in sandals like that. And then naturally, without even much effort, sandals, they just hang there on the feet like that, and do this work without a lot of conceptual figuring about how to do it. So the implication is that it's like these arguing monks had kind of taken off their sandals that protect them from each other, and kind of like put them into their brain or something. Put them up in put them on top of their thinking mind instead of down on the ground where they do their work. And that Zhaozhou was demonstrating this. It was showing, this is like topsy-turvy. It's gone wrong. This wonderful, beneficial, simple sandals, so easy to take for granted. We take them off and put them in on our arguing heads, and all is lost. In the commentary, or added sayings to the lines of the verses, about Zhaozhou, one added saying is, picking up whatever comes to hand, there's nothing that's not it. Now, if he didn't have sandals on his feet at that time, he could have expressed himself as something else. But picking up whatever comes to hand, there's nothing that's not it. That's why all of you who offered an expression in the room are equally, they're equally valid expressions here. Picking up what comes to hand in the moment, there's nothing that's not it. What a wonderful expression.
Well, kind of like saying there's no wrong answer.
Yeah.
Except to not respond.
Except to not respond. There's no wrong answer except to not respond. Thank you. Yes.
So if not respond,
Swami's the one answer, how about do not achieve silence?
Yeah, so it's all about context. Right, so you might know that story in the Vimalakirti Sutra. Monks were, a bunch of people were having a conversation, not exactly an argument, but maybe there's a little competitiveness in answering the question, how do you express the Dharma gate of non-duality? And if you read that sutra, there's many beautiful expressions of the Dharma gate of non-duality. More and more non-dual expressions in words that many people are giving forth. And then they turn to Vimalakirti, the hero of the sutra, at the end and say, how would you express it? And he just remains silent. They call that the lion's roar of Vimalakirti. In the end, the most clear, straightforward expression of non-duality is... But in this case, the Nanchuan said, didn't say so much, express non-duality most clearly. We could interpret it that way, but it's more like express something now that, breaks you out of your habitual pattern of this argument. So it could be that if their silence was not like but more like and you just felt the electricity of samadhi fill the room, then you would also lay the cat down and join them in zazen. But the implication is that their wheels were spinning looking for the answer. The Tiantong's verse to celebrate this story says, the monks of both halls were arguing, oh, teacher Nanchuan was able to show up true and false. Cutting through with a sharp knife, all oblivious of formalities, for 1,000 ages he makes people admire and adept. This path has not perished. A connoisseur is to be appreciated. In tunneling through mountains to let the sea pass through, only this great ancient tunnel digger, Yu, is honored. Referring to these old Chinese stories, as they often do. In smelting rock and mending the sky, only this goddess, Guan Yu, who actually mended the sky when it was broken, is considered best. This is kind of using these ancient characters to celebrate. Nanchuan is tunneling through mountains, and Zhaozhou is like mending the broken sky back together again at the end of the day. Wearing sandals on his head, he got somewhere. Coming in differences, still he is a luminous mirror. Only this real gold is not mixed with sand. So he's a luminous mirror. This is the year of the mirror. Yeah. Reflecting cause and effect, just like in the last story. Just receiving what's happening and not obscuring it. And as the mirror, immediately responding, which a mirror does best. Image put before it immediately responds appropriately and spontaneously to every situation. So. Do you have any questions about this? Or actions and responses and expressions to save this world of threatened cats. often it comes up in this story, but this is a big problem. How could this bodhisattva ancestor kill a cat? So nobody's expressed outrage here. You might feel outrage. And I think it's part of remembering these are all stories. But sometimes when in ancient times people had such an outrage too, and people would say, he didn't really kill the cat. He made a gesture of killing it to make the point. Or the cat is not really a cat. The cat is the reality before us that will be sliced and diced into discriminated pieces if we don't respond. But the commentators, when people bring up that stuff, they say, that's missing the point. Nan Chuan killed the cat because no one could respond. Yes?
Well, yeah, I've never liked this story before, but I'm actually really appreciating it, the way you're telling it. So, because I think it's important that we confront that we do kill the cat, that we not turn away from the way that our separating and, you know, being more attached to our story and being right than to actually being present with what is, it kills the cat. And I think it's important to
acknowledge that cats are killed.
Cats are killed. Cats are killed.
You could hear it as, you could hear it's about holding to a position.
Yeah. We do. Mm-hmm. Not so much that the appropriate response is silence or sandals on the head. Mm-hmm. It's that the authentic being is expressed, is put forward. Because like in Dobin's story, he didn't speak either in the Dotoku, you know, express the truth that I won't shave your
yes.
head.
Yes.
And there was no verbal exchange, but it was just this complete presencing so that he just, you know, they delighted in each other's presence and they recognized it.
Yeah.
So it's not about what you say or who said the right thing. It's the presence.
Yeah.
And I think the monks were just, you know, they were frozen in their story.
Yep.
Frozen
in non-response.
Yeah.
Or thinking, how can we say something that's correct? I think it's really...
Absorbed.
Yeah. And even maybe really cared. We could even think maybe they really cared about the cat, but so concerned about getting it right that they couldn't just willing to make a fool of themselves, actually. And I think I hear it as it's a heart thing. It's like speaking from the heart, even if we seem like a fool, like an idiot.
Mm-hmm.
We just have to do something, say something, express our life, be who we truly are. You could say you could hold up the cat. If you can just be yourselves completely right now, this cat will live. Reality will be whole. And but if you can't be who you are because you have to figure out the best one to try to be and present, then there could be dire consequences. So, yeah, may we as a sangha really be able to speak to each other heart to heart, and even if it's painful, even if it's like... people might not like this, but like I'm going to say it, and then we change our mind. But you know, in any given moment, here's how I really feel, and just express it.
Don't do it.
Yeah, and sometimes expression is like it has an edge to of we're trying to manipulate, get something we want. So I think maybe part of the art of true Zen expression is, can we just express our truth without saying, and maybe that'll, then it'll go like that. Like, expression with no expectation. And it might even be, I really, really, really want something to go just like this, but I have no expectation it will, and other people will have other opinions, and fine. This is, of course, very hard to do. Very hard to wholeheartedly express with no outcome stuck to it. I really this is how I feel completely. This is the basis of nonviolent communication, right? This is how I feel. And I even have these requests, but I don't have the expectation that you will fulfill them. My teacher likes to say that a lot to people. I make lots of agreements and commitments with people, but I never expect them to fulfill them. If I did that, I would be like in hell. Because often people don't fulfill them. But it's still good to make very strong agreements and commitments, but no expectations. It's just a provisional cause and effect kind of thing we do in this world. Yes.
Maybe the monks felt threatened by Nanchuan.
I think so. I think very much so.
Who would expect that the teacher is going to kill a being?
Yes.
And often when we are threatened or afraid, we don't want to stand out. We want to look good.
Mm-hmm.
We want to.
Yeah.
We're afraid.
Yeah. I think this is true in a lot of these Zen stories, especially because they talk in this really weird way, and you're kind of like expected to express something in not necessarily a weird way, but it's almost like they're talking in this kind of Zen language that we get more and more familiar with over time. It's beautiful. It's like learning a language. I think that's why maybe we'll read all 100 stories here. Kind of like, it's almost like learning by the end of the book, you kind of do learn a language, I think. Yeah. And so how can you express not falling into either extreme of existence and non-existence, Buddha nature, no Buddha nature, form and emptiness? How can you dance on the razor's edge of the middle way freely? Through your expression, can your expression be dancing on the razor's edge of the middle way? So the stakes are high. If people are, we're disciples of Nanchuan, so like, we're not just gonna say anything, even though we knew he wasn't around, so we were having this just like totally mundane argument. Please allow me to just close with Dogen's playful responses to this story. Dogen and his student Ko-un Ejo are having a conversation about this Zen story, Nanchuan killing the cat. One time in the Shobogenzo's Wee Monkey, and Dogen said, as this is part of the Zen style, as they sometimes do, if I had been Nanchuan, I would have said, at that time, if you can't say something, I'll kill it. Even if you can say something, I'll kill it. Who would fight over a cat? Who can save the cat? If I were the students, Dogen says, I would have said, we're not able to speak, master. Go ahead and kill the cat. I know, that's a pretty good one.
Yeah. Same, but you can't speak.
Yeah. Which I think Nanchuan would have heartily laughed and gently put down the cat. Said, that's great. Instead of like, we should be able to say something. It's a trap. It's one of these Zen traps. A lot of these koans are like that. Just say something, anything, and the cat won't be killed. We can't say anything because there must be some trick to it. We can't say anything, just go ahead and kill it. This is Dogen. A little bit unusual for Dogen. It's so kind of like earthy for Dogen. Or, this Dogen kind of made me thinking out loud, or maybe better yet, I would have said, if I were those monks in the assembly, master, you only know about cutting the cat into two with one stroke. Yeah, you don't know about cutting it into one with one stroke. You can cut the cat in two, but you can't cut it into one. And if Nanchuan said, oh, how do you cut the cat into one? What would you respond?
By not cutting. Manjushri sword.
Manjushri sword. Patrick put an envelope on his head and sat there. One envelope, not two sandals. People will be trying to interpret the subtleties of that for centuries from now on. Oh, actually, Ejo asked, how do you cut it into one with one stroke? Dogen said, the cat itself.
The cat what?
The cat itself. You know, maybe in Japanese that would be more, sound a little different. The cat itself. Or, you know, it might be like this sokuze in, often gets translated as, you know, it itself. But maybe we could translate it as, how do you cut it into one with one stroke? This very cat. Dogen added, he can't, he's got his creative wheels going now. If I had been non-Chuan when the students couldn't answer, I would have released the cat, saying that the students had already spoken. So this is a little bit like the Vimalakirti thing, I think. It's kind of like, very good. You've expressed completely with your silence. An ancient master said, Dogen says, when the great function manifests itself, no fixed rules exist. This action of non-chuans, that is, cutting the cat, is a manifestation of the great function of Buddha Dharma. It's a pivot word. If it were not a pivot word, it could not be said that mountains, rivers, and the great earth are the pure, bright mind. And it could not be said that mind itself is Buddha. Upon hearing this pivot word, see the cat as nothing but Buddha body. Upon hearing this word, all students must immediately enter enlightenment. This action, cutting the cat, is none other than Buddha action.
I'm sorry, I missed what the word was. The pivot word?
The pivot word is cutting the cat.
Oh, okay.
It's not really a word. By not bringing it up?
By making it like, oh, killing the cat is Buddha.
On some ultimate level, there's that side of things. And then on the conventional level, cats really are killed all the time. And is that Buddha activity? Is it manifestation of great function? Especially when a non-chuan is doing this on behalf of all beings. And if you haven't killed the cat, if you just said, if you can speak, I won't, you know, kind of like brush this cat away. Maybe it wouldn't have come down in all these koan collections through the centuries. It's something about the dramatic nature of killing the cat. Yes, and that's another interpretation, is that for centuries of people that I vow to help thousands and thousands of Zen practitioners over the next millennia to express themselves fully to save all beings, I'm going to sacrifice not only this cat, but my karma, and I'm willing to go to hell for an eon. And in fact, Nanchuan, interestingly, was this ancestor who said, he had all kinds of talk about water buffaloes, and kind of like, he had some karmic thing about, like, maybe he felt he had been a water buffalo before, he was like a water buffalo, and people would come and to bring him to the Buddha hall and say, how are you going to bring the buffalo now? And they'd grab his nose and pull him like a buffalo. And then he'd say, when I die, I'm going to be born at the foot of this mountain as a water buffalo. I don't know if he said that after killing the cat or before. Or whether he was just actually loved animals and wanted them to all be saved. And what is killing, actually? Was the cat actually killed? And was there like blood and guts like spilled on the Zendo floor? Or was there is there something else here that's being talked about in these stories? Yes.
So do they actually say what's like sacrificed and going to hell? Do they actually say that?
Sacrifice.
And going to hell.
Going to hell. In the Zen tradition, Buddhist tradition, there are various realms besides the human realm, and they're called or translated into English as hell realms and heavenly realms and hungry ghost realms and animal realms and so on. So there are the other realms of great suffering and great joy besides human. You could just say this universe is not limited to our measly little human experience. There's a lot going on that we're not aware of, and maybe that we are aware of also. But the difference in the Judeo-Christian heaven and hells and Buddhist heaven and hells is in Buddhism everything is impermanent. Everything is an effect of karma, effect of our wholesome or unwholesome intentional activities, and nothing lasts. So you can be born into a deva, like a god realm, a deva realm for many eons, but it will eventually come to an end. Same with hell realms. And all is just the workings of karma. It's beyond any particular being that's sort of judging us. It's only our own actions determine everywhere we go. As we know, in this life, right? Sometimes we have hellish days and heavenly days, and if we trace back the causes and conditions of such days, often we find that it's our own actions have been significantly contributed to such days. Sometimes we have animal days. And hungry ghost days. In a few days, we're going to make an offering to the hungry ghosts, hungry ghost realm. We often say, in our own hungry ghosts, internally and externally and everywhere in between. Actually, internal and external are kind of conceptual ideas anyway. All hungry beings throughout space and time. At the end of the Japanese cultural fair, a food offering ceremony. And to cap off tonight's event, we'll do another ceremony. Our good friend, Reverend Chris Burkhart, is leaving us in just a few days. This may be her last time in the Zendo, even. And she's been practicing here for a year and a half. So great to practice with you. And she's returning to her previous practice place, the Zen Center in Washington. And we'll do a departing ceremony after we close the talk. Thank you for your expressions and responses. May they continue to wholeheartedly fill this universe to benefit beings. May any merit arising from this evening's discussion be directed towards all suffering beings everywhere, and especially all cats in this world. May they have easy, joyful lives and be well loved. Being things on numbers. Thank you.